bow our heads. Heavenly Father, thank you so much that we can be here. And it's been a wonderful week, and this is Dr. Arlene's last day of presentation. And so we just pray over her this morning that you will be with her as she shares these wonderful good news with us. This is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, it is my last day here, but I hope it's not my last day. You know, you can just find something to laugh about all the time. I think I'm on laugh 41 this morning. I tend to lose track sometimes. So I do need to leave right after this presentation. I'm flying to Sydney so that I can fly to Brisbane. Go figure. I know that the United States has squirrely flights as well, but when I did look on the map, you know, it seemed like a long way to go to get not all that far away, but we shall see. So I want you to know that I have absolutely loved spending this week with you. It just almost felt, except for your crazy accents, it felt almost like being back home in my native land. So yesterday, a gentleman came up to me, a bit of a hunk, actually. I tell people I'm not so far over the hill that I can't recognize a hunk. He says to me, I'm coming to listen to you even though it's for women's ministries. I said, oh, you're under a delusion. Women's ministries is not about ministering to women. It's women ministering to everybody. So get rid of that perception. So I hope there are no male brains who could have really used the information who didn't come because they thought they weren't women. Okay. So let's begin with brain benders. Oh, and I must say, I really appreciate everything all those male brains did in the back. Pretty much everything all the male brains in the back of the tent did to help this program be successful. I've told you before, nobody is successful on their own. It takes a village. So it's just marvelous when you get the kind of support that just lets you do your thing and you know they're going to do their thing and it will all happen. All right, top left. You've seen this once before. What is it? Tall order. Order up, middle order, central order, standing order. Make your brain find additional solutions. Second on the left, side wind. Think direction. West wind. Wind is blowing from the left. You know, there's no right or wrong here. There's just what my brain thought of. Third on the left. Yellow, good job. Fourth on the left. Unfinished symphony, brilliant. Top right. Touchdown. Second on the right. What are the letters? I. So all eyes are on what? The game, good. Third on the right. One for all and all for one. And fourth on the right. Broken promises, which is what you want to avoid in order to teach children how to what? Trust. And if you fail to trust, what will you likely not be able to do? Delay gratification. All right. We're finishing up with a whole section on male-female differences. I you probably can't tell, but this is one of my favorite topics. Because the research is wonderful, and we all need to deal with people of the opposite gender, and so the more you can learn about that, the better your communication's going to be. So for years, before we got brain imaging equipment, many types of testing, often called psychological testing, showed that there was a significant difference between what males and females do easily, energy efficiently, in terms of different types of tasks and activities. No gender has the edge on the other. In fact, when you do, for example, IQ studies, although most males are quite sure that in general males have higher IQs overall, that doesn't pan out. You do thousands and hundreds of thousands of IQ tests, and the averages for males and women are the same. Now, it's true that when you look at the section differences, because there'll be a section on words and a section on, you know, spatial ability and a section on math and so on and so forth, those section differences show up. So females tend to do, no surprise, better, get higher scores on the sections that have to do with words, homonyms, antonyms, synonyms, and so on. Males, no surprise, tend to get higher scores on sections that have to do with spatial ability, S-P-A-T-I-A-L. It's a little dicey when you're lecturing in parts of the country where there are accents. I was lecturing down in the south of the United States, and I made the statement that males just seem to be a little bit better at spatial things. Guy in the front elbows his wife and said, "I told you males were special." And they are. They're also more spatial. So women do some things better, males do some things better in general. Remember, this is bell curve research, so that applies clearly to 2/3 of the population. 1/3 it won't apply quite as closely to, the other third probably even more closely. And although we observed those behaviors anecdotally, we didn't really have any brain imaging validation for those, and now we have something. There seems to be a clear difference in the physical wiring of male brains versus female brains. So traditional wisdom has said that males do better at reading maps and finding directions, and with any spatial ability involving muscles. And so males, except for a very few females, usually do much better at some sports. Not just because they're bigger and stronger, but because they seem to have this enhanced spatial ability. And traditional wisdom has said that in general, women are better at verbal tasks, especially anything involving memory and intuition. Now, intuition is a mental faculty that resides up in the right frontal lobe. So males and females, if they have their energy advantage there, can be very intuitive. But research indicates that women have a sixth sense of intuitive knowing because their brains are much more holistic, and that enhances intuition. So, gentlemen, you've got some intuition. If your wife says to you, "You know, I feel really strongly that if we do that, it's not going to work out," I'd suggest you pay attention and look at it again and see if there's any way you can minimize risk, because that female brain might have picked up something that your male brain missed. So enter something called DTI, diffusion tensor imaging, relatively new way to look at brain function. It measures the flow of water across a nerve pathway. And that's all habits are, that's all connections are, nerve pathways. Read the third paragraph with me. It can indirectly outline the path of myelinated axons that facilitate long-range conduction of electrochemical signals that are part of the brain's white matter, creating a neural map of connections. Okay, do y'all understand what that just said? You know, I didn't either. I had to go back and read it about 7 times. But this is how the research comes out. And if you just gave up, you wouldn't get it. All right, so axons are what? Remember, neurons, thinking cells. There's a picture of a neuron on the right side of your screen. That long projection from the neuron is an axon. It's how information leaves that nerve cell and gets transmitted to another cell. What does it mean when it says the axons are myelinated? They're paved. They're wrapped with a fiber optic sheath. Good. So when you have those long projections and they're wrapped with myelin, the brain's asphalt or the brain's insulation, information can travel much more quickly across those highways. And those axons can reach a long way in the brain, and I mentioned the other day, some of them in people who are tall, that would not be me, might have axons that are more than 3 meters in length, going from the brain right down to the tip of the toe. So when I told you that if you put a gray glove on your left hand and a white glove on your right hand and made fists, there's the colors of your brain, that's because in the right side, there's a whole lot more of these long axons that are wrapped with myelin. So, what's a connectome? New word. I didn't know that word before the research came out. Read with me. A connectome is a neural map that tells you whether one region of the brain is physically connected to another part of the brain. You can also compare similarities and differences between two populations, for example, male and female brains. So those of you who followed directions and read out loud are much more likely to remember this information because you used more of your brain to do that. You not only read it, but you heard your voice say it, and that will often move information into long-term memory faster. So connectomes tell you where these connections go in the brain, long axons. This modality, this way of looking at the brain is not very old. And so far, studies have shown connectivity patterns between nearly 100 different parts of the brain. That's a start. When you got 1 billion neurons, there's a ways to go, but that's a start. And no surprise, they've shown differences in the connecting patterns between the male brain and the female brain. So let's start with the male brain, because apparently it was created first. I don't know that that gives you any benefit, gentlemen. The first child is always under more stress than subsequent children. Nevertheless, most of the connections in a typical male brain run between the front and the back on both sides of the brain, 2 hemispheres. The only part of the brain where right-left connectivity is greater in males than in females is down in that first layer. You remember where you have the brain stem and that little cerebellum that helps to do with muscle control and so on. That's the only place where there was more cross connectors between the two hemispheres in the male brain. So here's a connectome of a male brain. And can you see that the majority of those connections are running top to bottom, up and down? And this, we think now, could account for that better spatial ability, better coordination with muscles, map reading, direction finding, vehicle driving. Okay, men have a lot more accidents than women, but that's not because they aren't better drivers. Males actually are more skilled drivers. The problem is they tend to act out their emotions when they're driving. You know, exhibition of speed and all of that stuff. But they're actually more skilled drivers. You know, they'd just be brilliant if they could get the other part of their brain going. And then translating perception to motor skills, as in some sports, I'd never ever, even when I was good at a sport, I'd never want to compete against a male. All right, now let's look at the female brain connectomes. They're very different. The pathways in the female brain are much more likely to run across the hemispheres, right to left, left to right, not so much up and down in the hemispheres. They have tons more connectors between the hemispheres. What does that mean? It gives them an advantage for anything that requires lots of interaction between the two hemispheres. So take a look at the female connectome. Can you see how those connections run? They're just clustered all over between those two hemispheres, which probably gives them the edge for verbal skills, intuitive abilities, which I mentioned earlier, memory tests, such as recalling words and remembering faces. And that doesn't mean all women are better at remembering names than men. But they often have an edge. You know, men will just say, AU, and everybody answers. And social cognition tests that try to measure empathy and emotional intelligence. Now, when we look at emotional intelligence, we don't find a lot of difference in, you know, way more women are emotionally intelligent than men. We don't find that. But women, when they really get serious about working on it, might have an edge on developing it a little more quickly. So there's your side-by-side connectomes. And I just finished updating third edition for my book, Your Brain Has a Bent, Not a Dent. And the week it was to go to the publisher, we got the information about connectomes. And I called the publisher up and I said, hold the presses. I want to put something in about connectomes. So it just got squeaked in before it went to the publisher, but that's the reason it was a little later becoming available. So make a picture in your brain. Can you see how dramatically different the connections are? There's an age correlation, meaning that up until puberty, there's not much difference in the connecting patterns in the brains of males and females, boys and girls. It's very interesting. It seems that these patterns only become apparent after puberty, in adolescence. The differences in brain wiring begin to show up about the same time that boys and girls start developing secondary sex characteristics. You know, developing breasts, you know, having external genitalia develop, growing hair on different parts of the body, and so on. So it's fascinating to me that we are really very much alike in many, many ways until puberty. And then all of a sudden, mechanisms that were loaded during gestation for being expressed during puberty suddenly pop out, and we get all these differences in the way the brains are wired. A couple comments about gender and emotion. We talked about this on Wednesday. We talked about emotions and feelings and EQ on Wednesday. We didn't necessarily talk about this. So the female brain processes more emotive stimulants, picking up emotion in the environment and in others more completely than the male brain. Horizontal connectors. And verbalizes emotional information more easily. Now, this is what Dr. Michael Gurian has found, who's done wonderful research on how boys and girls learn. Boys can sometimes take hours. I'd like to suggest days to process emotional information and manage it in the same way girls do. And I certainly picked this up with my three sons. You know, their girl cousins would be over and something would happen and the girls are talking about it already. Isn't that awful? That puppy is born with only three legs. And the boys are looking at it and go, three legs. Okay, what does that mean for that dog? And it may take a much longer time before males start thinking of the emotional implications of what happens. Emotions are distributed throughout the brain to some degree, but they are the right hemisphere is highly involved with emotions, as compared to the left hemisphere that's highly involved with spoken, written, and heard language. And because of these connectors that move back and forth, women talk about emotion actually much more easily. They can find the words faster. It's more difficult for men to talk about how they feel, although it is possible for you to do so, gentlemen. You just have to choose to do so, although you may have to think about it for a few hours. But it may take longer because of fewer connectors between the hemispheres. Now, here's what we find in grief recovery research. And you can go to my website and you can click on articles and then click on grief recovery pyramid, and you can find some of the current research. So when a couple has something really emotionally painful happen in their family, a child dies, a parent who is very close to them die, the female can't get pregnant or she keeps having miscarriages, he gets fired, she gets fired. You know, those are all emotionally problematic situations. She will start often talking about it to everybody who will listen to her. And he clams up and doesn't say a word. Because under extreme stress, the male brain becomes virtually verbally inarticulate. The female, on the other hand, develops diarrhea of the mouth. And since that's exactly what seems to happen, be aware of that. So women need to shut up long enough for him to be able to say something. And he needs to say something. Because if the person that you love most in the world as another adult never talks to you and you are really hurting, that's going to be unhelpful for the female brain. The reason males have difficulty with this is think of the male brain as having a one-lane road connecting the two hemispheres. It's not all that easy to drive on a one-lane road. Think of the female brain having 5 or 10 or 15 lanes on the highway. It's easy to run back and forth. And add that to the fact that males are not socialized, number one, to talk about how they feel, and it can take them much longer even to figure out what they do feel, and this can be a huge problem in a marriage. So something happens and she, you know, doesn't stop talking and he doesn't talk at all, and they can often split up, which is a real pity. So couples need to understand that and be aware of that, that there's a real difference in the way things are processed. So the right hemisphere, as I mentioned, is more involved with emotions. It's much more sensitive to reading body language, picking up how other people feel. The bad news is that women are also more gifted at concealing how they feel if they think they need to do that. Now, that can be equally problematic. because the male looks at her and she doesn't look exactly like she usually does. And he says, is something wrong? And she goes, no, nothing is wrong. And he takes it at face value and acts on that. And it might be better if she said, well, nothing's really wrong. It's just that I feel a little bad about such and such. So at least, you know, he can validate that she feels bad, whether he feels bad or not. And then we come to jokes. Males connect with others through humor. They tell jokes. That's how they connect. They find it more difficult to talk about emotion, but they're really pretty gifted at telling jokes. I really, really enjoy teasing male brains when I find one that's healthy enough to let me do that. You know, males love to tease if they feel comfortable around the person at all. But they're not always healthy enough to accept teasing back. So I've had a marvelous time with, you know, a dozen male brains on this campus this week who are healthy enough to be teased. And believe me, I've done a lot of it. Because it's so much fun having grown up with a father and a brother. So pay attention to that. Women, if men tease you, it's because they're tolerating you. So consider it a bonus. Because the research is that in general, males would rather hang out with other males. So if I'm sitting in the cafeteria and some males sit at my table and start teasing me, that is a huge compliment. Took me a few days to get back understanding the accent, so I have no idea what they said the first two or three days, but we can hope it was positive. Women, on the other hand, rarely use jokes. They can't even remember them. And they certainly don't understand their husband's humor. So one of these years, I would like to do a whole section on the difference between male and female humor and see if I can't help some of you women to get it. Because if you can get it, you just got more than twice as much to laugh at and easy to get your 400 laughs a day in. So women, we can learn to tell jokes. We'll tell them differently. Males make really good stand-up comedians. Women do not. But women are better at situational comedy, you know, telling something that they thought was funny and they'll tell the story. Males can just reel off these one-liners that have me absolutely gasping for breath. It's just very funny. Let's talk a little bit about now a couple of these applications, especially in terms of map reading and direction finding. Women, have you ever said to your husband, I think we need to stop and ask for directions? And what did they say? No. I can find it. Can they find it?
No.
Oh, they usually can. You bet your sweet bippy they can. They just may not be able to find it in the time allotted. So, for example, one general conference that was being held in New Orleans, I was not only speaking but getting an award. And so my husband and I flew to New Orleans, and our hotel, we could actually see the Superdome. So I needed to be there at 8:30, and I'm thinking, boy, I can see it very clearly. Give us a half an hour. That should do it. So we leave it at 8 o'clock. New Orleans is filled with one-way streets. I don't know if you know that. And instead of getting closer and closer to the Superdome, we got further and further away. I'm watching the clock. It's 8:15. I look at my husband, and I go, it's over there. He goes, thank you. I said, we're getting farther away. He said, we'll get there. I said, I know, but I need to get there by 8:30. So it's now 8:20. We're even further away. And I said, I think we need to stop and ask for directions. He says, I can find it. I said, I know, but I need to be there today. He says, I'm not going to pull into a gas station and ask some 18-year-old how to get there. Probably doesn't even know. Okay, remember that, because males, that's a lame excuse. I finally, at 8:25, said, I got to go to the bathroom. He says, yeah, that happens when you're stressed. He said, I'll find a restroom. So we stop at a gas station. I run in. I did use the restroom, so I was not lying. But then I asked the 18-year-old kid, how do I get to the Superdome? I got 5 minutes to get there. Oh, he says, I'll tell you exactly how to do it. He says, you go out of this driveway, you make 6 right turns, and you'll end up at the parking lot. So I hop back into the car and I said, okay, let's go. Make 6 right turns and we'll end up in the parking lot. He says, I thought you went to the bathroom. I said, I did. But I also asked the 18-year-old. I shouldn't have added that part. We got there at 15 seconds to 8:30. So here's what we know. Again, up until about puberty, a little bit after the age of 8, direction-finding abilities and reading map abilities are equal in male and female brains. But then, now we get the connectome changes, and we have the problem that it's really not safe to just let your little girls run out the front door and spend the whole day exploring. And it's the exploring on your own, figuring things out. Where are you going? How are you going to get back? That helps to build those abilities, those characteristics. So we find that there are very few cultures in which adult males and females have pretty much equal direction finding and map reading ability. And one of them we find in the Native Alaskan population. Because if you're 8 and you're a girl or a boy, it doesn't matter. You can take your sled and your 3 little, you know, sled dogs and your lunch, and you can go out for a day or two and then come back. And they have much more what we call field independence. So that can be one of the things that parents need to pay attention to for their little girls. Find areas in which it is safe for you to take them and let them just wander around. You're keeping an eye on them so they don't get lost and fall off a cliff, but they do get to have some more of that experience. So I mentioned driving. Males are more skilled drivers overall, although they have more accidents. But again, that's because instead of talking about emotions, they go out and exhibit them. Little girls, for example, bond through telling each other emotional stories about who likes me and who doesn't and what happened. Little boys bond by beating the tar out of each other. And then they're best friends. So it's very different. There is something to be aware of. Because of the connectome patterns in the female brain, they have increased sensitivity to environmental conditions. So my husband and I are driving. I think we were in Wisconsin, and we drove. I was driving because we took turns. And suddenly we got in a hailstorm. And I'm talking about a hailstorm. I'm talking about hailstones that were as big as a golf ball. And they were just banging off the metal roof of the car and hitting the windshield. And I was very distracted. And I said to my husband, I'm unable to drive safely in this weather. I'm pulling over at that overpass, and I want you to drive. He says, well, make sure you get under it. I did. And he went around and started driving. And male brains are less distracted by environmental conditions. Actually, sometimes they can even drive better. And so, you know, I've got my arm covering my head. I don't know what I thought that would help, but and he's just driving along whistling. More distraction, helping him, you know, avoid the golf balls. Now, as I read Genesis, monkeys were created before men. Just because that happened, my brain's opinion is that doesn't necessarily make monkeys good role models for males. However, this is what we find. You take 30 primates and put them in a cage. Within 24 hours, they will have rank ordered themselves from 1 to 30. Do it over and over and over again with different types of primates, certainly different individual primates. It always happens. So the male brain is a little more hierarchical. Once you know that, you don't have to be a victim of the fact that your brain is a little more one way than another. What does that mean? It means that the person on top, the primate, or the male who perceives he's on top, when you do blood work and evaluate stress hormones, the guy on top has the least stress hormones in the blood, the lowest level. Who do you suppose has the highest level of stress? Guy on the bottom, lots of cortisol, lots of adrenaline, so on and so forth. Okay, monkeys do that. Male brains are more hierarchical. But if you understand this, you can stop trying to climb the pecking order every time you turn around and stepping on people on your way up that are going to, it's going to increase stress hormones for them. You place 30 female primates in a cage. It never happens. Never. You know, it's really rare in research when you can say always and never. Well, here's what appears to be an always and never. Males always do the hierarchical thing. Females never do the hierarchical thing. So you got these 30 primates, and what they do is they form themselves in little small groups. And there's often a leader in the small group, but not in the sense of the guy on top, you know, the president of the United States or whatever. So we never see that ranking effect among females. That's the reason females don't mind asking questions. This got nothing about position on a pecking order. It's the fastest way to get information is to ask a question. And I don't care if you're 6 or 60. If you got the answer, give it to me. You know, when I arrived on campus and I was trying to find some friends that I hadn't seen for a long time, I was walking around. I didn't realize that the C and the T on the signpost meant something. First of all, I didn't know what a caravan was. I kept looking for camels. So I asked a man that I passed, do you know where such and such is? And he goes, no, can't say I do. End of discussion. I found a 6-year-old, no kidding. And I said, I'm lost. He goes, too bad. See, he doesn't have all of the vertical connectomes yet. He's still a little empathetic. I said, this is what I'm looking for. He goes like this. Well, ma'am, he says, I think you're looking for a T. I said, I know I'm looking for a T. I just can't find it. He says, there are no T's on this side of the campus. Okay, that's very helpful. So now I know I have to go to the other side of the campus. So I don't mind asking questions, and I don't care who I ask them of. I just want the answer. So we do find that in general, females have what's called a collegial, organizational chart. There's rarely these layers of hierarchies. You know, there might be one person in charge and everybody else has sort of got equal access and equal jobs But the male is a much more of a hierarchical organizational style. And many churches follow that as well. You know, who's on top? In this particular denomination, we've got a president, and then we've got, if I remember right, we've got divisions, and then we've got unions, and then we've got conferences, and so on and so forth. That's very hierarchical. And when you see most of those positions held by males, women sometimes go, it's not fair. They're taking up all of the positions. And I go, yeah, because they feel better about themselves if they have a position. You don't need a position to feel good about yourself. You just need to work. So pay attention, because that is very artificial, the way it's applied. So bottom line is, women are much more willing to ask for directions because it's got nothing to do with their worth as a person. Whereas males, if they're not as healthy emotionally, asking questions has everything to do with whether they think they're smart or not. Okay, read my lips. Nobody can know everything. So figure out how long you want to take to learn something new. And sometimes the fastest way is to ask a question. Now, in terms of giving directions, this can be a huge problem. Women have no problem giving each other directions. But it will go like this. Where do you want to go? Oh, fine. Okay. This is what you do. See that signal light up there? I want you to turn right, and I want you to keep driving until you come to a golden arches. Now, if you go too far, you'll come to a big banana. That means you have to turn around. Okay, once you get to the golden arches, then you turn left, and you go until you see a white fence. At the end of the white fence, you'll see two driveways on the left and one driveway on the right. Don't take the driveway to the right, because if you do, you'll end up at a dead end. Take the second driveway on the left. Now, you're going to wind all over the place. You're going to, you know, go over a bridge and so on and so forth, but if you just stay on that road, and there are no others, eventually you'll get to where you're going. All you women know exactly what to do, right? I tell that to a male, he faints dead away and never finds it. They do not accept directions well like that. First of all, you got to give them the bottom line, because it takes them more energy to even listen to you. So by the time you get to the bottom line, they're already out of energy. But males do direction-specific instructions. Okay, that doesn't work for me. So a male will say, I remember stopping at a gas station one time and saying, I need to go to such and such a church. He said, oh, that's no problem whatsoever. He says, just go south for 2 miles, then turn north for another mile. And I go, wait. I could probably do that if I had any idea which way was south. He looks at me and he said, well, it's really obvious. I said, not to me. Which way is south? And he goes, that way. I said, okay, fine. Now I got it. Okay, I go south 3 miles. Then what do I do? And he said, now you go west 2 miles. Okay, I've got to think of a map. If I'm going south, okay, I got to turn right to go west. All right, so now I've got that. All right, south for 3 miles, turn right for 2 miles, and then what? And then he says, you just go north for about a mile and a half. Okay, I've gone south for 3 miles, west for 2 miles. Now, where in the heck is north? Oh, I think it's another right. That is very difficult for most women to do, which is why we spend so much time of our lives being lost. So what's the takeaway? You need to tell people directions in a way that works for their brain. And if I have no idea which is south, north, east, or west, and a man asks me for directions, the first thing I say is, okay, tell me what direction this is. And he'll look at me with eyes crossed, and he'll say, you know, this is north. I said, okay, fine. And then I've got to convert for him, and I will go. All right, what you want to do is go east for 3 miles, go south for a mile, go east again for a mile and a half, and you'll get there. Okay, that takes a lot of conversion in my brain, but that's fine. He gets it. So men, when you're giving directions to women, I hope you have been alert to some landmarks, because telling the average woman directions is unhelpful. You know what we often do, men? We say, thank you very much, I appreciate your help, which was nothing. And then we'll go find a woman to say, tell me how I get there. Because we can get the landmarks. And that's really too bad. You know, we need to be gender bilingual. You know how difficult it is to speak to somebody when each of you speaks only 3 or 4 words in each other's language? Well, we do that all the time with male speech and female speech. So the more gender bilingual you can become, the better. So bottom line, men, I don't care if you use directions when you're talking to men. Great. Women, I don't care if you use object-specific directions when you're talking to women, but it's not going to work cross-gender. So figure out how to do that. We could literally go on and on and on and on and on about male-female differences. The bottom line is whether or not you've decided to have fun with them. You know, we've talked about a lot of different types of differences. Something as simple as male speech is more direct, uses primarily nouns and verbs. And it's all about telling people what to do. Come here, go there, do this, stop that, do this. Nothing wrong with it, but it's very direct. Female speech is very indirect and suggests a course of action. So, for example, mother checks her 10-year-old son's bedroom, and it doesn't look the way she would like it to look. So a little Farquhart comes through the kitchen, and she puts her arm around him, and she smiles, and she says, you know, it'd be really nice if you cleaned your room before you went out to play. What's the message? It's optional. And little Farquhart thinks, clean my room. When she cleans my room, she takes down the curtains and washes and irons them. And she changes the bed sheets. And she vacuums the floor. That's a lot of work. She was smiling. She looks happy. I'm out of here. And he goes out to play. She checks his room. Nothing has changed. She goes ballistic. She finds his father. Your son went out to play without cleaning his room. Do something. So, Dad, who has a very direct speech style, finds little Farquhart. He does not put his arm around him. He does not smile. He says, son, pick everything up off the floor of your room before you leave the house. What's the message? It's specific, direct, and it's not optional. Little Farquhar picks everything up off the floor in his room. His mother checks the room. She goes ballistic for the second time. She says, "How come he did it for you and not for me? I don't get any respect in this family." "Okay, what's the problem?" She's speaking female to a male child. Father spoke male. Now, there are times when a male is raised, for example, by a primarily all-female family, mothers, sisters, aunts, and so on, and he may grow up speaking female, or at least have a good grasp of that language. Sometimes he sees so few other males that he doesn't even learn his own language. Now, that can be problematic, because now he goes out into the world and he speaks female out of this male body to other men, and they go, "Weirdo." And sometimes you will have girls who are raised with a father and maybe some brothers and no mother in the home, and she will speak male. That can be a problem for her. She goes to a baby shower. All the women are chatting, and she's speaking male, and they're going, "Who is she?" Because it doesn't match expectations. If you just keep your eyes open, you will find opportunities to see all of these acted out, and then you know how to choose the behavior that's going to get you the best outcome. One of the times I have the most fun is if a group of couples goes out to dinner together. That is just food for weeks of seminars. So the first thing that'll often happen is, let's say, four couples sit down around the table. You know, they don't even have their serviettes on their laps. Almost said napkins. Sorry. They don't even have their serviettes on their laps, and a male will start to tell a joke. Because remember, how do males connect? Through jokes. And he won't get more than a phrase out of his mouth. And his wife will say, "I'm sure they've heard that one before." Or, "Can't you wait a while before you start telling those jokes?" Or, "I heard that one and I didn't think it was funny." Okay, women, shut up. That is how they connect. And then halfway through the meal, a woman will stand up and she'll say, "I'm going to the loo. Do any of you want to go with me?" What is that about? It's about she's noticed something. And she wants to talk to the rest of the women about it, and she doesn't want to do it at the table. So they'll go off to the restroom, and they might not even go to the bathroom. They're just all chattering in there about what they thought they saw. And then when they're done, they all happily go back to the table. Meantime, the men have been all telling jokes. Have you ever, in your entire life, ever been in a situation like that and had one of the men stand up and say, "Guys, I'm going to the John, you want to come?" It never happens. So we could go on all day. Those of you who said to me, "Not a lot of fun things happen in my life," I go, "Are your eyes open?" But what happens is we'll have a difference like that, and the women will not understand and get upset. Or the men won't understand it, and they'll clam up instead of just talking about it and laughing about it, pumping, you know, endorphins, serotonin, dopamine, feeling really good, and be delighted that you live with such a source of ongoing comedy. And instead we miss it. So my hope is that you remember at least one or two things that you heard. I understand the research shows adults have to hear things four times before they really get it. But you can tell each other what you learned. You will have heard different things, actually. People always do. And the more you remember them, talk about them, and implement them, well, if you're anything like me, the healthier you get, the happier you get, and the more fun you have in life. So that is my wish for you, because that's also scriptural. Thank you.